Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, let's go.
Here we go. In, clock on the wall says 3, 2, and 1. All right, Matt, another edition of our Formula 101 podcast. Mike Bell from Dukes and Bell with our producer, Bo Morgan, a.k.a. Squid Billy. And we'll just dive right into the Canadian Grand Prix because a lot of you got to see it thanks to ESPN and ABC putting it on the mothership. It was on ABC, 2 o'clock from Canada, one of my favorite races, a race I've had a chance to go to about 10 times. And it is one of the best venues to watch the race, one of the best cities to party in, Bo. I know I'm going to try to get you on that for next year because yeah. It's relatively inexpensive. We always say you'll spend more money trying to get a direct flight on Delta to Montreal than you will on hotels and your food and everything else, aside from the race tickets. But weather was perfect, hot and steamy. We had great qualifying battles. Ferrari finally looked like they had their stuff together. Lewis hit the wall, had problems on race day, had to bleed the brakes, bleed the hydraulics. And at the end of the day, it's unfortunately what we've come to expect in 2019. NFC Championship game, jacked up by the refs. Damn Kentucky Derby, jacked up by the refs. Stanley Cup Finals, jacked up by the refs. And now, you could argue, Formula One, jacked up by the refs. In this case, they're called the stewards. Emmanuel Pirro, longtime race driver in a number of different disciplines, including American Le Mans, said that Sebastian Vettel was worthy of a 5-second penalty for coming off the road surface and not reestablishing a clear lane or path once he got back on the track.
You guys can't see us, but when Mike just gave that explanation, I turned my hat around backwards, much like Sylvester Stallone in Over the Top, because that's how pissed off I am about this decision.
Right.
And I know I shouldn't say that on the podcast, but I don't really care. This is a...
Oh, you can say whatever you want on the
podcast.
Well,
you're not supposed to. This is a bunch of crap. This is absolute garbage. I was watching the race live because I said, you know what? The day is free.
I'm glad you had free time. I know you're such a busy guy on a Sunday.
You know what? I got yard work. I got work around the house, Mikey.
Hey, Mr. Burbs.
It was lucky for Formula One and it was raining and I could go to the pool.
So you get down like everybody else. We turned a lot of guys on Twitter. I said, hey, by the way, if you get a chance. So a lot of people, I think, that might not have normally saw this. And guys who weren't familiar with Formula One agree with Bo, like, how did Vettel get penalized? What's up with this? So let's explain what happened.
Well, they said it was an unsafe. So first off, he goes in, he loses his car, kind of the back end kind of goes from him, so it kind of kicks out on him.
Because they've got less downforce to compete with Mercedes. They've got a good power plant. They always do well at Mercedes. They always beat Mercedes in Montreal recently, you know, when Seb can keep the car on the track. But he was on the ragged edge of performance, as was Lewis.
Yeah, well, these guys were – Lewis was on him, and you can give Lewis a lot of credit because Lewis's performance put Vettel in a situation where he had to push it, and he did. And he's pushing it, and it's kind of like when you're if you've ever sat at a red light and you've driven a V8 and it's mm-hmm. wet outside, and this was really something that happened in older cars, especially the old Mustangs or old Camaro, and you just punch it. You're going to spin.
Right,
okay?
Fishtail it.
And when you do that, if you do not bring it back the right way, you'll go every which way but straight.
No, he comes back. He skids off the grass. And also, there were some aerodynamic effects because there were some cars ahead. So he's getting a little bit of a toe. I think it was Kvyat had gone through the 3- and 4-turn sequence there. And so either way, Vettel gets a little sideways. And as he goes over the grass, is able to get control. He gets a little oversteer, snaps it back. I think, though, here's the rub. I think he sees Lewis closing and trying to make the sneak on the inside. He even admitted in one of the first interviews he did that he saw Lewis in his mirrors. So even though Vettel's saying I had no control, I think he had some car control and he squeezed Lewis Hamilton. I think that's where the steward said, you know, you're not doing what you're supposed to do when you come off the track.
Didn't Lewis do something similar a few weeks ago to
Verstappen? I'm not debating. Lewis cut the chicane coming out of the tunnel at Monaco. I'm not debating that Lewis didn't do that against Verstappen when Verstappen was all over him after he got a 5-second penalty for an unsafe release in the narrow pits in Monaco.
Which it should have been a 10-second.
All I'm saying is, as a guy that's, you know, drives cars, has raced some cars, I'm just saying, if Vettel doesn't screw up, we're not having this conversation.
I know
Vettel screws it up. So just like, again, if Lewis had hit the wall and Verstappen's able to get by him, I mean, I get it. Individual stewards, it's not like you have one referee for each race. There's usually guys, sometimes it's a former Formula One driver. It's a guy who's raced in sports car. IndyCar, Danny Sullivan has been a steward, former Indy 500 champion. Yeah. Pirro saw it and interpreted it a certain way to the letter of the law. A lot of people say it's bogus.
Well, it is. Well, here, you're speaking on a bigger issue, and let's get there, because I'm about to jump off on that, because this is something that we've killed other sports for, including racing, NASCAR, with no consistency on the rules, no consistency with how they make draft and all this.
No, it's a bad rule. I'm not going to argue. It's a bad rule that needs to be reworked, and the FIA, who rules F1, will have to come up with some tighter language or open it up even more, because if you're going to interpret this to the letter, you're depriving the race fans of a fantastic race and a fantastic finish between two champions with nine championships between them. I'm with you there.
And this is what we want to see. And you go back to Monaco, to what we just talked about. If you allow it there, first off, let's go back to Verstappen. His unsafe exit should have been a pass-through. I said 10 seconds a minute ago, probably a pass-through, which would have been about that. But it wasn't. It was just 5 seconds. Then, when Verstappen has the moment to pass him, Lewis goes through the chicane, like you just said, which should have been...
He cuts it, as opposed to using the track. He cuts the chicane on asphalt at the end of the tunnel.
And that could have been a penalty. Right. But, oh, no, let's not penalize the great Lewis Hamilton. No.
All right, now, hold on now. It's, again, you're letting your heart get into this one, because
you're a Vettel fan.
You want to see Ferrari win. Look, the way it was interpreted, I don't agree with it at Monaco, but that's the way that official saw it. Now we got another official in Montreal, Emmanuel Pirro, who, for whatever reason, gets it down to like the subatomic level. All the announcers on Sky Sports, everybody from Jenson Button to Martin Brundle to Karun Shandok, everybody said there's no way that should have been a penalty on Vettel.
I don't want to hear about, oh, well, the steward for this race is there. You're Formula One, okay? You need to have the same rules for every race. This is the crap that we complain about everywhere.
When you give a referee a chance to interpret a rule, like, for instance, in the SEC, when you got the targeting rule, how many times out of 10 are they going to screw that up? You know, even when you go to the replay. I'm with you. The human element, in this case, screwed up what should have been a fantastic race. And for those who are not Formula One fans and you just tune in, I want to give you some perspective on why this is such a passionate argument. Mercedes has been blowing doors on everybody. Ferrari has had a lot of turnover with their team. They've got a new driver in Charles Leclerc paired with Sebastian Vettel. Kimi moves on to Sauber. So they've also had a hard time coming up with a car that can beat Mercedes-Benz. The only two races they really could have won were Bahrain, where Charles Leclerc has a nearly 10-second lead, and then his engine has an electrical malfunction, and he loses first and eventually winds up with a third-place podium. In the case of this race, Vettel has better qualifying. Lewis had struggled. Mercedes had struggled. Bottas had struggled. And this was a chance for Ferrari is going to win. And who knows, might be their only win this season if Mercedes continues their dominance. So there's a lot of passion there. I'm with you. But to me, we don't have this moment if Vettel doesn't make the mistake.
But there's no doubting that. But you can't be okay with the no call in Monaco where Lewis made a mistake and was able to basically gain an advantage from it. When Vettel makes a mistake, he can't gain the same.
To the fan, I get it, but I'm just telling you. I mean, I you have to compartmentalize it. That's in the Monaco 2 weeks ago has no bearing on what happened in Canada. In the mind of the fans, I get it. You're going to say, how does this one fly and this one doesn't? I'm with you.
It's the consistency, though. They've
got to change that rule.
I don't disagree, but you and I have had this conversation in other sports where, you know, we've had it off the air in between segments when you and Carl are having a conversation, and the number one thing, you know, consistency. And Formula One has none. And it was a bad look when you finally get on broadcast television in America for the second straight week. You've had two bad calls in a row.
Yeah, but again, Vettel blew it. And by the way, Vettel's, I know he's upset, and it was pretty funny to see the post-race histrionics.
Great.
Him not pulling up. Now, again, for those that aren't familiar, Parc Fermé basically means where you park the cars. In French, at the end of the race, you have the 1-2-3 position. He parks the car at the end of pit road, goes immediately to FIA to give them an earful and find out why the hell he just got hosed out of a win. Eventually, he goes to the motor coach. He gets coaxed by his manager to come out. You got to do the podium. You're going to get fined like $100,000 if you don't make the podium. And so he comes comes back to where the car is, where Lewis's car is by the number one. He takes the number one, moves it over to the vacant spot where his car would be, and puts the two in front of Lewis.
Essentially, it's victory lane.
And then he goes up, and he was as gracious as could be. I thought, by the way, Lewis handled it with a lot of class. Lewis said on a number of occasions, not the way he wants to win. But again, if that's Ferrari and Lewis does that, they're on the horn to FIA too, just like Toto Wolff was. You try to fight for the advantage.
That's great. And I thought it was awesome the way Lewis handled it. I also thought it was funny that during the race, Lewis was like, hey, that's unsafe. Make the call. You know, are we doing it? Yeah, we're obviously doing it. Boy, but as soon as he got in front of – and look, I would have done the same thing. I have no issue with that. I just think it's funny how – you know, he said, hey, it wasn't my call. Well, no, it was. You were on the freaking radio complaining.
You get squeezed on the wall. See, because Ferrari fans, and I'm a Ferrari fan, but I've lost faith in Vettel because I've seen this happen. This is about the fourth or fifth time I've seen this in the last couple of years, whether it's Lewis Hamilton or whoever he's competing with, where I've seen Vettel make mistakes. Winning in Germany, goes off the track. Supposed to be one of the best wet drivers out there, and he couldn't handle it. We've seen him lose his cool in Baku, where he slams into Lewis Hamilton. To me, this is just another example. Vettel, the frustration, the car's on the ragged edge to beat Mercedes. And again, I don't like it any more than you do. I'm just telling you, Vettel has got to be better. Okay, Vettel's got to be a better driver. He's made mistakes. This isn't the first time we've seen this when he gets forced by Lewis.
I don't disagree with any of that. And look, we're seeing a product. He has became a product of his environment. He is not making his environment a product of him. And what I mean by that, if you don't explain it, is Ferrari is so far behind, and you've said this, we've said this in every podcast, that this was his shot. In 2019, this was his shot.
Won the race last year.
And he ran, other than that mistake, he made one mistake all race, and that was it. And it cost him. And unfortunately, in today's Formula One or 2018, 2019s, if you drive something that is not a Mercedes, you can't make a mistake. We've seen Lewis make them, and because of his – Even in Monaco, the reason Lewis was basically on bad tires and he was making mistakes, but because of his horsepower that Mercedes has given him in the straightaways, he was pulling away. It was and I know this is NASCAR and it's happened yesterday, but yesterday in the race in Michigan, one of the faster tracks, Joey Logano was not faster in straightaways. Cars would get right up on him. Even in the entry to the turn, the cars would come down. But what he had was his exit out of the turns would give him almost a half a second lead every time, and you couldn't get up on him because that's when you got to make the pass.
Look, you can always see it with Red Bull, for instance. You know, Red Bull, they're set up perfectly for Monaco, you know, because Ricciardo wins it last year. And Verstappen had to do a better job of qualifying. But Verstappen, with a five-second penalty, he was pushing Lewis. He was all over him on fresher tires. But at the end of the day, Lewis, you just talked about it. He could power out and really pull ahead, and then Verstappen would close. You see Verstappen and the Red Bulls, how good they are in the curvy section of Montreal. But Montreal's ultimately a paperclip. I mean, long straightaways. It's a horsepower track. And just like an IndyCar, and we saw that again, by the way, if you didn't see Joseph Newgarden won in Texas. Great race. A lot of action, couple of wrecks
late. It's a
fast
track, too.
But yeah, Joseph Newgarden, if you didn't see it, same thing happened, exactly the same thing in the Indy 500, where if you didn't, Simon Pagenaud won, he's got Chevy power. And unfortunately, you got Alexander Rossi, he can't catch up in a Honda. Hondas don't have the horsepower to catch up Chevy and Indy, and Honda does not have the horsepower to compete with Ferrari and Mercedes in F1 this year. They don't have it. Renault, in the hands of a McLaren, was good. Best race, by the way. We'll go through the finishing results. But just real quick, just to bring it back to the initial argument, if you are new to Formula One, you're like, what was that rule again? The reason why Sebastian got penalized to the letter of the law, the five-second penalty, is picture yourself at a track with a little bit bigger runoff area, and you've got one of the back markers, okay? Let's say it's one of the Williams, like Kubica spins the car out, and he drives it right back onto the track in front of oncoming traffic. That's what they're trying to penalize drivers from doing. In this case, they say that Sebastian, in an uncontrolled manner, is back on the car, brings the car back on the track. They would have liked him to stay a little bit further to the left. Mm-hmm. He closes on Hamilton, and this is where it gets open to interpretation. I think Pirro said Vettel not only had the car control, he was able to move over and block Lewis. So, unsafe way to re-enter the track. He's supposed to give a lane. Now, again, we'd love to see these guys go wheel to wheel and just settle it like the way we used to on this on the racing in Formula One and around the world. Not the way it went down. I do think they're going to open up that rule, give the stewards more leeway to let these guys race, because you just touched on all the things. You're trying to grow the sport. It leaves you scratching your head like if you're watching the Kentucky Derby for the first time this year.
Yeah, and The other thing that people need to realize, if you're new to the sport, is it's not like NASCAR where you can bump those front fenders unless you hit them in the right spot.
Dead center.
Yeah, which will come down and maybe rub the tire. These cars make contact. The front wings are very fragile. You can change the front ones out, the front wings out, but both these guys are out of the race.
Right.
And Vettel knew that, and I don't know if he knew where Lewis was, I mean, what I mean by that is I don't know if he looked and said, "Oh, I see him." Right. Mentally, I think he knew where Lewis was going. You know how the moves are. You know these courses. And so he did that.
Oh, by the way, I've got to squid. I got no problem with him doing what he did. In the old days, he's like Ayrton Senna would pull that move. Ayrton Senna would have the car control coming through a situation like that, or and it would probably be against Alain Prost, Nigel Mansell. You're taking all the greats, man. When you look at the history of the sport, and Lewis, by the way, was victim by the same rule in Belgium in Spa about 10 years ago when he was driving for McLaren. So it does have a way the racing gods of evening out, even if it takes a decade. But I'm of the opinion F1's going to say this isn't good for the sport because this is the kind of racing people want to see. Just accept that, Vettel lost it, got control, and had enough control to squeeze his opponent from getting by him on the inside.
Is Charles Leclerc ever going to get a regular podium moment?
Nope.
So he has the moment where he finishes third by default because of a safety car where he's dominating the race, and you touched on earlier with the engine failures. Now he has this one where his teammate is all kinds of pissed off. He's moving signs around and comes in. And not only that, but he sits there for the first 10 minutes with Lewis. And Lewis is the best guy in probably the sport to be stuck in a victory circle situation with. But, I mean, my God, his teammate's not there. And now, then he finally shows up and he's angry and he lashed out in a very European way.
Look, Vettel, like I said, when Vettel was at Red Bull and he was winning the championships, you never really saw him like this. He's lost a bit of his cool. I mean, look, he's going to go down in history as one of the greats of all time, but Lewis with the car, Lewis with the composure, and Lewis, Lewis keeping his cool, saying all the right things. We'll talk about I finally got a chance to see the David Letterman interview with Lewis on his Needs No Introduction series on Netflix. Talk about that a little bit in a bit here. But to me, Vettel's lost some cool points in my book. I just think he's lost his cool. Now, again, I got nothing against it. It was fun. It made for good television.
It was great. I was laughing out loud.
But he's lost his cool and he's made mistakes. Formula One drivers, lower resting heart rate, supposed to be nerves of steel. You can't let a guy rally. And by the way, you and I talked about this on the text on Sunday after it went down. He's the only guy that I saw who had a squirrely moment in the turn 3 and 4 complex at Ile de Notre Dame. No one else did.
Well, and that's.
I mean, I'm just telling. I didn't see any of the replays. The guys getting squirrely.
That's fair, but it's unfair because we don't. I mean, they're not going to show us if my guys from Williams are making.
Well,
let's
just say this: of the top 3 or 4 runners, nobody had that moment at the turn 3 and 4 at that situation with Vettel had.
Well, that's great, but nobody else had Lewis Hamilton in DRS zone behind him, pushing him for a race win. And look, I don't disagree. For the record, for you listening out there. It's not that Mike and I disagree, per se, with each other. We just have different opinions of how we want to see it.
I think it sucks for Formula One. I'm just saying if Vettel doesn't screw up, we're not having this discussion.
I don't disagree. I just think it's easy to put it on Vettel because he did make the mistake. I don't disagree. Right. But we've seen other Lewis Hamilton, Monaco, make mistakes, and they get away with them. And I'm not saying that this world isn't fair. This is part of it. Does Sebastian Vettel got to handle it better? Yeah. What we saw after the Montreal Grand Prix was a direct factor of what he's been through the last 2 years with his team and what he's been through this year with his teammate who's not supposed to be faster than him, being faster than him at times, not having the car. And he pushed it to the edge and he made a mistake. And that's what happens. Even the greatest drivers – we see when they push it to the ragged edge, you're going to make mistakes.
Oh, Senna famously squid, leading Monaco just dominating Monaco years ago, and with just a few laps to go, hits the wall, takes himself out. So, I mean, the greats, it happens to the greats because I don't think people realize, even Lewis, with a car that looks as dominant as Mercedes, the car vibrates, the rear end, you've got tire wear. you have to be, and he talked about this in the letter interview, you're on, I mean, the absolute razor's edge of performance in that car. You know, and that's the car that's the best car in the world right now. And that's how, that's the kind of driver it takes. So even though people say, well, I could take Nico Hülkenberg and put him in the Merc and get the same results, I say not necessarily. Lewis is that guy. He's one of the best. You have to agree with me. He's certainly the best at late braking, only maybe surpassed by Daniel Ricciardo.
I said it after Monaco, and I'll say it again. In fact, it's Sunday was a direct result of what I'm about to say. Lewis Hamilton is the best in the world right now, and he showed it the last 2 weeks. He made a mistake and had bad tires in Monaco, was able to overcome it. He forced a mistake this week in Montreal and was basically won himself the race because of how good he is. Now, I know we can't spend all day on this, so I'll go ahead and transition. Speaking of not keeping your cool, our boy, we're both big fans of Kevin Magnussen, who races for Haas, which is our American team. Boy, when you come on the radio, and I immediately thought of Kurt Busch from NASCAR when this, when you come on the radio and you start saying like things like, this is the worst car I've ever been in any level of any time in my entire life, and then you just keep moaning and whining. You set yourself up to get what he got from Gunther.
Well, if you didn't watch the Netflix, you can still go on Netflix, guys, and watch the Drive to Survive, which is all about every team other than Mercedes and Ferrari who declined to participate because they're Mercedes, AMG, and Ferrari. But you got to see the backstories of all the rivalries, the moves that led up to guys changing teams this year, like Daniel Ricciardo going from Red Bull to Renault. But Magnussen drives, as Squidbilly said, for Haas. For the life of me, my wife laughs every time I watch Formula One. The British people can't say Haas. They say Haas. They can't say Haas. A Haas is a Haas. But anyway, in the Haas car, which is American-owned, Gene Haas, who also owns the team with Tony Stewart, Stewart Haas, in NASCAR. But anyway, Magnussen wrecks in qualifying, hits the wall, destroys the car in the Wall of Champions. It's the final chicane, and you swing it out wide, and they call it the Wall of Champions because all the great drivers have hit it, and thus the Wall of Champions. Schumacher famously in 99 destroyed his Ferrari hitting it. So he wrecks the car, totally destroys it. They got to rebuild. They got to build an entirely new car from the back up. And if you've ever read any of the Steve Matchett books who used to do the commentary on ESPN and NBC, it's an all-nighter for the team to get that car ready to go. So Magnussen in the closing laps, as Squidbilly alluded to, gets on the radio. He's like, this is the worst experience I've ever had in any race car ever. And he keeps going on. So Gunther Steiner, who's the team principal, runs the team, finally gets on the radio and goes, none of us are happy about the pace. The guy stayed up all night to fix the car, so let's bring it home. You know, Steiner goes, for us, it's also not a nice experience. Enough of that now. That's what it means. Enough, enough, enough means enough. Because again, Magnussen, who I'm a big fan of, his dad was one of my favorite drivers in the Le Mans series and in, you know, in endurance racing. He comes off like a real little spoiled brat. You wrecked a car. If you don't put the guys in that situation, you wouldn't be in the worst car of your life. So shame on Magnussen. He sounded like his teammate, the Frenchman Romain Grosjean, who's normally crying like a baby
in the race. He wouldn't have the gall enough to actually say something that bad, but he would have just, this is terrible, right?
Yeah. But good for Gunther to shut it down.
Well, I loved it when Gunther did it. There were three moments when I legitimately laughed out loud during or after this race. When Gunther went off on Magnussen, because when we've watched it and you see the Netflix, that's the equivalent of Gunther Steiner going off on you.
Right.
When Vettel gets out of his car, goes too far, then pushes it back out of the way, and then charges into the trailer. And then
he's going to put the car in neutral and push it back because he won't pass FIA.
That was hilarious. And then he walks up and removes it. We talked about it. But the Magnussen thing, and let's give Magnussen some credit. I think when Gunther did that, said that, it kind of brought him back to reality. He gets out, walks up to not only Gunther, but Gannon? Gary Gannon, the race engineer, and apologizes. Then he goes over to his crew and says, look, I'm sorry.
He says, I'm frustrated, you know, and you guys in the garage, big apologies. So Magnussen owned it. But again, the audio bad at the time, but at least he manned up at the end of the race. Because, look, it's a team sport, okay? You're at the sharp end of the spear driving the car, but you ain't got those guys, you know, turning wrenches. You ain't got a ride.
Well, and they put you in a position to win off the trailer, is what I like to say. I know that might be different, but off the trailer, they're supposed to put you in a position to win. Well, what you have to do is go out there and put them in a position to win on race day by, in practice, by qualifying, by handling your business. He didn't. Mm. And then they tried to put him in the best, but it was just a bad weekend got worse.
Right.
And they happened. But you can't get mad at people and you can't play the blame game. That's not a team.
Lewis gets the win. Vettel, we talked about his circumstances. Charles Leclerc, his second podium for Ferrari in third place. Then you had a Valtteri Bottas, who, again, he's got to start to bow up. You know, he looked good earlier in the part of the season. Now he's starting to have some of those issues midweek.
And that's proof that you can't just put anybody in Mercedes. Yes, he's had a great year.
How he didn't hit the wall coming out of turn two was unbelievable. He gets on the gas, and I sat last 2 years ago in Montreal, where you can see the front stretch. You can also see as they go by you and they go up into turn two, and then eventually that all the way to where Vettel wrecked, or nearly wrecked. But yeah, that was unbelievable. He did like a 360, kept the, you know, powered it out of the spin, kept it off the wall. That's a nice piece of driving. Verstappen in fifth, Ricciardo, I thought, great job. Best finish certainly of the season for Renault, but both Daniel Ricciardo and Nico Hülkenberg in the top 10.
And he had a chance, Mike, at the start. He had a chance to really jump up there. I just don't think Renault has the power to compete with those Ferrari and Mercedes.
No, Mercedes. Now, it's funny, McLaren has got good power from Renault. One of the craziest things, give you an idea of the kind of heat that you saw earlier in pre-race. Ferrari did not have the tire warmers on. People are like, what's going on there? Letting the brakes just kind of be nice and cool. If you didn't see it, Lando Norris, a young British stud driving for McLaren, he heats up his brakes so much that temperatures get over like 1,000, then over 1,500, then over 2,000. He melts the carbon fiber on the struts, and the strut just breaks, and the right rear wheel just comes off. At first, it looked like he hit the wall. It was like wacky, and it winds up at the end of the pit road exit. They left the car there for the race.
Yeah, and it just almost like it melted it and just warped it up, and then you could see the fire. And I think he thought that it was a bad fire because he kind of jumped. He kind of hurried himself out. The first time, if I'm not mistaken, all year he's really had had to retire. I believe. I mean, he's really surprised people this year.
Right. And Sainz, if you didn't see it, Sainz gets passed by Lance Stroll and by Daniel Kvyat on like the next to last lap. Unbelievable moves at the end of the backpack. Hey, hats off to Lance Stroll. A lot of people think of him as like just a total twit, a rich son of his billionaire father, but he brought home a top 10 for the team in their home race. Talked about Gasly. He's not as good as Verstappen yet, but I think he accorded himself pretty well. And Daniel Kvyat, a guy who looked like his career was over, gets a reprieve to drive for Red Bull, the Russian driver. And I tell you what, two things. He doesn't have the acne he had when he was racing back in the day, and he's actually a lot smoother on the track. Yeah. So he looks good out there. Perez can't crack the top 12. Giovinazzi actually outpaces his teammate Kimi Raikkonen for the first time in the Sauber, which is a glorified Ferrari badge as a Sauber. Alfa Romeo, that was interesting.
Maybe Magnussen was so mad because Williams' car finished in front of him.
Right.
Hey, climbing up 16th. They're getting closer, Mike.
Slowly but surely. And again, we'll talk plenty more, guys, next week about the French, 2 weeks from the French Grand Prix. It's a circuit in between Marseille and going up towards Nice at Paul Ricard. It's a really cool track. We'll have plenty to dive into that. Who is your driver of the race for the French, or the Canadian Grand Prix, I should say, in Quebec?
You know, this is going to sound bad. I actually think it was Sebastian Vettel. I know that he made the mistake, but he did something that Ferrari hasn't done all year, and he led every lap. And obviously he didn't get the win, but I thought it was him. He had a great weekend. He put that thing on the pole. He gave it his all. One mistake cost him, and it was a controversial one at that. I give it to Vettel.
I'm going to give it to Lewis Hamilton because he put the pressure on Vettel to cause the mistake. They bled the brakes. They had hydraulic issues. The car, you know, Lewis hit the wall himself. You know, he had an incident earlier in practice. So the Mercedes guys had to work. Yeah, so P2, I should say, Q2. So he practiced second practice. He had to deal with some issues in the garage himself, but Mercedes got on it. The car, by the way, is beautiful. That car is just something else. If you hadn't seen on Netflix, the David Letterman Needs No Introduction, they're into the second season. Letterman obviously is a gearhead. He and Ray Hall and Lanigan own an IndyCar team. I saw Dave at Barber Motorsports for the Grand Prix of Alabama
pit
road, and his driver won Takuma Sato. But anyway, getting back to Letterman, if you get a chance, great interview with Lewis Hamilton. Letterman talks to his dad, talks about the hardscrabble days of getting started. Finally, when Lewis decides that I've got to move on from my father as a manager, the hard feelings that caused. Now his family all good and back together. Being a black kid in England, having to deal with rich snobs on the track while his dad is trying to just rob Peter to save Paul to get his career off the ground. I think Lewis had a few moments where he became sort of the jet set spoiled brat, and I think Mercedes kind of helping Nico along that year kind of gave Lewis a reality check. They didn't broach that in the subject. If we ever get a chance to talk to Lewis, I'd love to ask him about that. But Lewis has been on point, man. Letter perfect the last three seasons.
Yeah, he and I know this is, and I'm not comparing him
right
to this person, But he reminds me of the way he handles his business, always with class, like a Jimmy Johnson type.
Right.
You never see him get sideways. You never see him really go out and confront someone. And when someone has an issue, he always tries to handle it well. Jimmy's always done that as a seven-time champion. Lewis has done that, and Lewis showed that the last 2 weeks. Very, very classy.
So check that out. We'll have the French Grand Prix on the way. And if you get a chance, if you DVR'd it, the Indy race is pretty darn good, too, down in Texas with Joseph Newgarden from Nashville getting the win and getting pressed by Rossi. Hey, man, we appreciate all the feedback. I know you and I were talking to a lot of people on social media. Give them your Twitter handle if they want to talk
to you. It's at SquidBilly929. Just keep the tweets coming.
And I'm at Mike Bell, ATL. And every time, I don't know if you guys don't subscribe to Autosport, when I have a cool story, I put that link up there so you guys can check it out. But, yeah, man, it was cool to interact with some first-time racing fans of Formula One, and the guys are intrigued by it. Hopefully you get the bug like we do. And we'll talk to you soon right here on Formula 101.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.